I'm Michael Rosenbaum, Lex Luthor, and always hold on to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. On this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of The Young Superman Show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. And this week, I'm joined by a very special guest, Miss Rose Liston. What's up, Rose?
Hi, how are you doing? I'm super excited to be here.
Rose is actually an actress on The Magicians. You play Jane Chatwin. So, you know, I don't know how much crossover there of Smallville fandom and Magicians fandom is, but there you go, guys. We got Rose on the show.
It's all pretty awesome and magical and crazy, so there should be some crossover, let's be honest. I crossover, so there you go.
So, hey, just before we jump into talking about the show and stuff, how did you come to be an actress working on genre TV like The Magicians?
Well, I started acting when I was around 9. I lived in England at the time because I'm half English, half American. Honestly, I was a 9-year-old that did an acting class, and the acting teacher said, Rose, I think you're really good. You should go to this acting class. And I was like, oh, great. I'm 9, and I will take that as something I should do because you just said I'm really good at it. So then I actually became infatuated with it and found that it was an amazing career path, an amazing community to be a part of. And so that's where it started and led me here. To LA.
Living the Hollywood dream out there. So,
right.
Well, that's awesome. So, yeah, and you can see The Magicians on the Sci-Fi channel, right?
Yeah, and it's also on Netflix. Always good.
There you go. What's not on Netflix these days? I'll tell you what's not on Netflix. Smallville. Smallville's not on Netflix. But...
I know.
But it is on Hulu. And here on Always Home with Smallville, I'm always going through. Hulu should give me like a lifetime membership. I pimp Hulu so much on this show because I'm like, oh yeah, guys, Smallville's on Hulu. Smallville's on Hulu. Smallville's on Hulu. Because yeah, I can't tell you how many times I see people ask like, where's Smallville? It needs to be on Netflix. I'm like,
where the rerun?
It's not, but it's on Hulu.
Yeah.
So yeah, now we know a little bit about where you came from, Rose. How did you come to Superman? What is like your Smallville fan, and when did you start watching the show, and when did it become one of your favorites?
Well, I actually watched it like when it originally came out, but I was quite young. I'm only 21 right now. My mom watched it. My dad was in the military, and we lived in Germany, and we got like 2 English speaking channels, and one was the military channel, and I don't remember what day, but every specific day of the week, it would come on, and me and my mom would sit down, and then I would hear, so then throughout the years, I would hear the theme tune. I'd be like, was that from Smallville? Or I'd see one of the actors, and I'd be like, Mom, we used to watch a show with them in, right? She's like, yeah, Smallville. I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because it would be like distant memories for me. And then I started then watching newer The Flash and Arrow and everything. And finally, I was like, why have I not watched Smallville again? And so I started watching it a few months ago, and now I've finished it again. And I'm just in love with it. And I'm so happy that it was somewhere, like Hulu, that I could find it easily and relive basically my childhood memories that I almost forgot.
No, absolutely. Like, no, so you say you watch, you know, the current Arrowverse shows, Arrow, The Flash, and all that. How do you think Smallville holds up in comparison to all those?
I like it better. I do. But I am really into 2000s era of shows and music. And so I think I'm a bit biased about that. But I also... I really think all the acting in all of them I really love. And I really like Superman the most. So I was bound to enjoy Smallville the most out of all of them.
Well, if you love 2000 music, you've come to the right place, because this show is nothing but a nostalgia trip. When you listen to the soundtracks like that, the music alone is reason to revisit this show. It's amazing, right?
Yes.
It's like going back in time.
Definitely. My boyfriend hasn't watched it with me, but he'll be like in the room when I'm watching it, and he'll be like, wait, isn't that the music from the album? I'm like, I don't know. It's from Smallville now.
That's right.
Associated with now. It used to be from an actual album, but now it's from Smallville. But I love it.
Absolutely. No, that's how it works. Now, this is a very interesting episode we're talking about. Velocity, which is the Fast and the Furious episode, basically. Now, are you a fan of the Fast and Furious movies?
You know, I'm not. If they had Superman, maybe I would be.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of them. Like, it amazes me that that's still going. Like, that the first Fast and Furious movie was, like, 1999. And here we are, almost 20 years later, and we're still making Fast and Furious movies. That's amazing to me.
Yeah, I mean, they have their audience, and they're done well. And obviously, the effects and everything have got better in every movie show, but I bet the racing is even more spectacular now.
Mm-hmm. They're gonna reach a point where it's like, how far can you go with it? Like, they're gonna go into outer space soon, I think, on Fast and
Fast
and Furious movies. But
they'll race some spaceships. It'll be great.
Yeah. So in Smallville, The Official Companion, season 3 by Paul Simpson, available wherever books are sold. Miles Miller, one of the creators, had this to say about this episode. I never understood people's problems with Velocity. It's a completely legitimate episode of the show. We have to do different stories. To me, it's really a fun, high-concept, cool, well-shot show. The interesting thing is that the shows the fans hate, we often get our highest ratings for. So, there you go. Al Goff, the other creator and executive producer of the show, said, I really liked the episode, and I don't understand the gripe over it. Sam is terrific in it, but it proved to us once and for all that for all the grousing and comments online, people don't really care about Pete. So this is like, if there ever was a Pete episode, this is it. What are your thoughts on, like, Pete on Smallville? Did you miss Pete when he left? Do you feel like he was underused?
I would have liked to see a more character development for him, and I do like Sam as an actor in the show. But yeah, this episode, it didn't make me love him. I was like, you have this amazing best buddy who's always looking out for you, and then you make these decisions, man. Like, get over yourself.
Yeah, not his strongest hour as a character. I mean, I'm glad he got an episode that focused on him.
Yeah.
But as they said, this kind of like sealed the deal. We're like, oh, okay. And I think about Whitney back in season 1, right? He had the episode Kinetic, which in my opinion is like the worst episode of the show. It's with the dude bros with the kryptonite tattoos.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, man, we gave you one episode, and it didn't work, so you're gone. And I feel like that's
right.
The same approach they did with Pete here, unfortunately. But I think he was underused, and they thought that, oh, by letting him know Clark's secret, he'd be a more integral part of the show. But, I mean, they should have wrote him into the stories more. Like, he has had, like, one scene an episode for most of season 3. And it's like, look, guys, write him into the show, right?
Yeah, I was really surprised that they still did that after Clark revealed his secrets to him. Like, I really did think he would be, like, his proper little sidekick for a longer duration than he was.
Hey, how's your dad?
He's doing okay. But in case you didn't notice, you almost obliterated our truck last night. My mom was behind the wheel.
I'm sorry if I scared your mom, Clark. But I swear I was in complete control the whole time.
At 100 miles an hour.
Clark, you're not exactly one to talk about breaking the speed limit. You know what it's like to move so fast that nothing can touch you. For me, this is as close as I can get.
How long have you been doing this?
I don't know. A couple months.
How come you didn't tell me about it?
Because I knew you'd want to ground me and take away my allowance.
Pete, this isn't a joke. You could really hurt someone.
Like, I know how to handle these cars. Dante's the best driver in Lowell County. He's taught me everything he knows.
Including how to break the law. Street racing is illegal. You could go to jail.
Not if no one finds out. You're good at keeping secrets, Clark. You're not gonna tell anybody, right?
Velocity is the 13th episode of Smallville's third season. It aired on February 11th, 2004. 2004. It was written by Todd Slavkin and Darren Swimmer and directed by Jeannot Swark, which I think I'm saying that right. He's French.
I mean, it sounds good how you said it.
He actually has a really good pedigree, as I mentioned in the last episode that he directed Perry, the Perry White episode earlier this season. He did a lot of great genre films in the 80s. He did Somewhere in Time with Christopher Reeve and Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman, Jane Seymour.
Right.
And also Supergirl, the Helen Slater Supergirl film from 1984. She will show up later on Smallville as Clark's mom. And then he also directed Jaws 2, the sequel to Jaws. So he has a great genre pedigree from the 80s.
Wow.
Anyway, the episode starts out, we're at a hospital. So we got a hospital visit plus one already, because this is Jonathan. He's recovering from his heart attack from the last episode.
Yeah.
As we saw, and hereafter, he had a heart attack at the end. And now Clark, of course, he thinks it's his fault, right? Because he thinks Jonathan got his powers from Jor-El to get him home, and Clark blames himself. But honestly, Clark blames himself for everything. Yeah. So this is, you know, just a little, like, follow-up to what we saw in the last episode. Then we cut to Martha and Clark. They're driving home, and they see a drag race, right? And then Martha and Clark almost get hit by these cars driving down the Smallville country road or something, right?
Right.
Like, Clark gets out to chase him down. First of all, I find it suspicious there's, like, this kind of crowd at a town like Smallville. It doesn't seem to fit, in my opinion.
I suppose they need some excitement, though. Everything else is so unknown. All the excitement that happens is, like, under wraps. All the other mysterious... So I suppose this, like, cool gang of drag racers is, like, would bring a crowd. You have nothing else to do. They don't even have a movie theater now. I mean, what are they going to do?
Turn into a stupid coffee shop. Yeah. Well, you know, so Clark, he speeds up these people. Also, we see they have green exhaust coming out of the car, which it's like, I wonder what that means. And we'll see in a couple scenes here. But who do we see but Pete Ross getting out of the car? He won a race, and everybody's like, Ross the boss, Ross the boss. It's like, oh, it's Pete. Oh, boy. I guess Pete got into drag racing at some point. Oh, exciting development, right?
Right, at some point when he wasn't following Clark along the roads, running around.
I guess that's what he's been doing this whole time, since he hasn't been in episodes. He's been track racing, right? Let me cut to the opening credits. We cut back, and Pete's getting his car souped up by some guy named Dante, and Clark comes and confronts him. And Clark, he asked the question that we've all been asking. He's like, how long have you been doing this?
Right.
Because I thought, you know, Pete was into, like, basketball and sports. I don't know. Do you count racing as a sport, like car racing?
I mean, not how he was doing it. There's no rules. So, no.
That's it. Street racing, no.
Yeah.
IndyCar racing, maybe.
Maybe. Not my preferred sport, but I will let them have it.
Right. Not to disrespect all the NASCAR fans out there, or Indy 500, or stock car races, but it's like, you know, a lot of work goes into that, I get it, but like, I do feel like turning left all day in a circle is a little less challenging than playing, you know, a sport where you're out there running around, right?
Right. I would think so. Although, I did only get my license last year at age 20, so I was a little bit worried about driving, so I would have to give a bit more props, I guess, because I couldn't do it.
And these are high schoolers. These guys have only been driving for like a year.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
That's especially dangerous.
Right? Super dangerous.
I like the conflict here because Pete's obviously doing something that he shouldn't be doing. It's illegal, right, and it's dangerous, so that's like two strikes already. Clark, you know, he's a Boy Scout. He's like, hey, you shouldn't be doing this. This is dangerous and it's illegal.
Right.
I like the conflict, but I feel like they could have picked something better than drag racing, right?
Yeah, and I think that's what I think that's probably just what the fans didn't like. I think it was probably their choice of, like, maybe, I don't know what he could have been doing, but maybe it was just too boring for the show.
Well, obviously, and this is a Movie Plaza and Episode Plus One, that's another one for the tally board, because they're tapping into, as we talked about, the Fast and Furious, you know, vibe that's been going around in the early 2000s. I was going to say the early 2000s, but they're still making the movies, so I guess it's still around.
Right.
So, I mean, that's what they probably went to, because if you look at this stretch of episodes here in Season 3, there's a lot of episodes based on movies. You know, like, we have, like, next week's Obsession, that's based off of, like, Fatal Attraction. Week after that is Resurrection, that's based off of John Q, that Denzel Washington movie where, you know, his son has a terminal disease and he holds a hospital hostage. Like, so they just, and I get it, when you have 22 episodes a season, you start to run out of ideas. You're like, what's popular right now? Let's try to do that. And that's, Season 3 is so guilty of that, for better or for worse, I guess. But anyway, and I completely agree with you, Rose. I think that's what the fans had an issue with, because it's so blatantly, let's rip off Fast and the Furious. Like, there's just no attempt to hide it, right?
Yeah. There was no, I guess there was no Smallville Superman twist other than obviously the green exhaust.
Yeah, because that's what we see them doing earlier in the scene. You know, that he's souping up the car with liquid kryptonite, which is got to be one of the worst uses for kryptonite in the show, where it's like, like you said, that's the only angle they could find that makes it Superman. Yeah. And it's like, really, guys, like, I believe them using kryptonite for certain things. Like, you know what? I can buy that if you get electrocuted and you have kryptonite and you're holding Clark's hand, you can get his powers, right? All cool.
Yeah.
I'll go with that. But to say that, oh, if we melt it down into like an exhaust liquid, it'll make your car go faster. Like, that's just, that is not science. That's stupid. So.
But who would have thought of that either? I mean, I don't get it.
Yeah, it's like, who had that idea? It's like, bro, listen, hear me out. We're gonna melt this down. We're gonna dump it in the gas tank, bro. It's gonna be awesome. Like, who? Who would even thought of that?
The gas prices went up, I guess, back in 2004, just like you did here. I don't know.
How much is gas in California right now, if you don't mind me asking?
Yesterday, a gas station right off the freeway was $3.99. Yeah.
That's it?
Like, that's it? Is it?
I'm a little disappointed.
Oh, it's yeah. In Texas. That's funny.
Well traditionally in Texas it's always been lower, right? Because like when I was younger, like back when Smallville was on TV, right, I was paying $1.50 for gas, right? And then I would go out to California and it's like $4.50 out there back then. I was like, that's crazy,
right?
But it seems like the playing field has been kind of evened out some.
Yeah, everywhere is, I just want to walk, but it's too hot outside, so I can't. I need some kryptonite. So
there you go. That'll help you. I'm sure that if I don't think there is not a use of kryptonite that like cools you down. Only if you get frozen in a lake with kryptonite. That's the only way kryptonite to make you colder, I guess. But
does it all.
Anyway, that's the setup of this episode, and that's where we're going with it. We got guys driving cars that are made faster by kryptonite. Then we get to our subplot with Lana. And we have our continuing story of Adam Knight, right? And she's done some investigation and found that she's found a headline. It says, Tulsa Valedictorian dead at 17. So he's not Bruce Wayne. That was what we were all talking about and joking about, right? That he'd be Batman because his name's Adam Knight and, you know, it's karate and computers and music and he's mysterious and he's an orphan. And that was a cool fan theory back in the day. But this episode pretty much confirms he's not Batman. But Chad Nash, what a lame name, right? That's his real name. I would change my name to Adam Knight if my name was Chad Nash, right?
I think it's a good pseudonym, except it kind of stands out. It'd probably go with John Smith next time, I think.
He tries to play it off. He's like, well, everybody has a doppelganger. Like, he's trying to act like he's not this guy, right?
Right.
But Lana's like, oh, look, he was in computer club and karate class, and he was in orchestra, so all the skills that Adam has.
Yeah.
They start to argue a little bit, and his eye starts bleeding. This is creepy, huh? What you think of that?
Oh my gosh, it was super creepy. The eye bleeding thing made me really confused as to what would be going on with him. I kind of had a theory that his eyes were robotic, but no, I thought he was like a spy.
So you think he was like a cyborg or something?
I didn't know. It was very mysterious. Anytime blood comes out of eyes or the people cry blood, it's so weird.
No, really, it is really creepy looking. And then she leaves. She's like, okay, Lana, you got to promise me, don't tell anyone about this. And she's like, oh, okay. And then he slams the door and he, shoots up or whatever. And he's all better after that, right? So.
Yeah, Lana is not a good judge of character. but I do like her, but she's not.
She's getting smarter at least, right? She's starting to ask questions and do some investigation, but still, don't let strangers move in with you. So her friends are concerned about this. We got our next scene. Chloe goes to talk to Lex, and this is a great scene. Chloe and Lex have some great scenes all of season three. And basically, she's done some investigation. She's had that vial she found. When she was snooping around Adam's place, she found a vial in a previous episode, and she wouldn't have had it analyzed. By the way, these are not Chloe's unseen connections. That's a tally board category we have. But she says she went somewhere and got it analyzed, and later on she went somewhere else and got some information. So those do not count. I know you all are going to be like, well, you forgot this. I didn't forget it. Okay, so I'm just want to say that now, but we can debate it later in the comments. But anyway, so she's had this vial analyzed. It has blood pallets that the doctors have never seen before, right? So you're thinking what is this, right?
Exactly. He was a total mystery. And I obviously didn't know that theory about Batman. Otherwise, that would have made total sense. And now I'm upset that he wasn't. Whatever.
Yeah, this episode is where they really kind of can't go that way. They go to the point of no return. I think up to this point they could have still made him Batman, maybe, but Batman's not bleeding through the eye and he's not dead. He's not some loser named Chad Nash who lived in Oklahoma. I did like that Chloe referred to him as the talented Mr. Ripley. pop culture reference. So basically, Chloe has traced all this back to a Dr. Ting who works at Metropolis University, and but she can't get access to follow up any further, and that's why she's come to Lex. And I said, you know what? Golf clap for the writers. That's actually a very smart reason for her to come to Lex. You think to yourself, why would she even ask him? But now we have a logical reason. She's gone as far as she can investigating, and now has hit a wall. So now she's turning over to Lex. So I thought that was pretty smart.
I really appreciate when she actually doesn't have the random connection somewhere and she actually has to be like, Clark, I need your help doing this, or Lex, I need your help doing this, because some of them are obviously a little bit like, Chloe, you are a high school journalist, what, why do you have a connection in the morgue? But this I liked that she had to go to Lex and use that normal connection, I suppose.
Clark has done some research on and he's found that there's been a series of accidents the last couple of months with these kryptonite infused cars. Because he confronts Pete in the road. He stands right in front of the car, which is like, what are you doing, Clark? Pete's like, hey, I could have hit you, and this car's not even mine. So he's been kind of irresponsible, right?
I think when it comes to, obviously, lots of the incidences. All of his best buddies, but when it comes to the Pete's and the Chloe's and the Lana's, he really doesn't think all the way through. He's getting more into the, if I do this and this and this and this happens, but he's still at that point that he's wants to confront the issue immediately and try to resolve it, not completely understanding that he can crush most things that he stands in front of.
Right. But, this scene basically reveals that Pete has an inferiority complex about Clark. He's always had it, even before he knew his secret. He's like, you know what it's like to run at 100 miles an hour and this and that. And he mentions a couple things. Clark's like, what are you talking about, Pete? You're good at basketball. He's like, I'm okay at hoops, and I'm a decent photographer. And I was like, what? Photographer? Have we ever seen Pete take a picture on this show? I can't remember.
And that is where backstory falls apart. Like, you can't just randomly throw these things in. I needed more information than that.
Yeah, I mean, so basically he was the Jimmy Olsen to Chloe's Lois Lane. That's what they're trying to imply with that. And that would make sense.
Right.
But that's not what he did. Like, he was never following Chloe around with a camera. Maybe he had a camera a couple times. I remember Chloe taking pictures with her giant camera, you know, in, like, earlier episodes. But I don't really remember Pete taking pictures of anything. So it's just, I kind of zeroed in on that, or him listing off things that he did. Basically, Pete's like, look, are you going to physically stop me every time I go to race? And Clark's like, yeah, I think I will. And Pete, very unconvincingly, is like, okay, Clark, you win. I'm not going to race anymore, which I don't buy that, right? Uh-huh. Neither should Clark. Be naive.
I mean, that is Clark, though. He believes the best in everybody, and that's why we like Superman.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's his true greatest weakness, right?
Exactly.
So Clark goes to visit his dad to play some checkers, which is cute. You know, that's exactly the kind of stuff you do with your parents or your grandparents.
I mean, in Kansas, probably.
yeah. This is exactly why people are out street racing, right? They're sick of playing checkers at home.
I'm telling you. No movie theater. They have to play checkers. So what else are they supposed to do?
So Jonathan's like, hey, go have fun with Pete. You know, go to a movie or something. And Clark's like, Pete has other plans. He's been hanging out with a different crowd. And Jonathan's like, does different mean the wrong crowd? So I like that this is a good idea, but again, the execution is so bad. Because yes, you know, as you grow older, because they say, hey, you and Pete have been friends since you were kids. You know, people grow up, they grow into phases.
Right.
That's all true. That's all very accurate. But I don't really think it applies to this situation because it's all coming out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, if they just needed a few more tidbits, I think, throughout a few episodes of him, like, drifting away would have then made this more believable. And I love all the Jonathan and Clark conversations, so I didn't really mind that it didn't make too much sense and it was basically just a filler.
It's true. It's good filler, though. Yes. It's good filler. And we get to our next scene, and it's Pete at a race. Shocking. Didn't listen to Clark.
No one listens to Clark, and then he has to save everybody. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, these people, they do it to themselves, really. But Dante tells Pete, hey, it's time to take a dive. Like, you won a lot, great, but now all the money's on you, and you need to take a dive, right? And Pete feels kind of betrayed by this because this guy showed him everything he knew about driving cars. But he's like, hey, man, this is how it goes, you know. But so the race starts and we see Pete. He's like, he's thinking about pushing that kryptonite button. He's thinking about it. He doesn't do it. He gets close to the end, right? And he pushes the button anyway and he wins. And everybody's like, Pete. And he's like, oh, yeah, I won, right? It's very predictable.
Well, I was happy that Pete followed through with what he told Clark, like that he liked, that he loved racing for the racing, etc. And he wasn't like worried about the money, but we find out later, but carry on.
You know, it's different when like somebody asks you to like throw a boxing match, you know, like Daredevil's dad, right? Like, hey,
right.
It's time to throw this match, you know? But I mean, that's a legal thing. That's like the boxing match itself is a legal thing, and you gambling on it is making things be illegal by asking you to throw it. But you're doing illegal street racing, so you're not taking some moral high ground by not throwing it, right?
I mean, no, but Pete, as we said before, high schooler. So I think him not doing more bad things should be put in his favor.
True. Fair enough. But, you know, Dante pulls him aside, and he's like, hey, I lost $20,000 on you tonight. You're going to give me that car back. You're never going to race again, and I want my 20 grand or you are dead, right? So it's the stakes have escalated now for Pete, huh?
Totally. And I mean, this is every episode I'm just like, why do they not listen to Clark? Because this is what happens. Everything escalates. And I think Pete's biggest character flaw was he never really thought things through. Just like everybody else in high school.
So next thing, we get Clark leaving the hospital, and Lana is coming to the hospital to kind of, you know, visit his dad. Now, this scene, I wish we had gotten the next scene of her actually visiting Jonathan. That might have been an interesting scene, because those are two characters who never have any scenes together. But instead, we get this stupid scene, and it's talk about filler. This is bad filler. The Jonathan Clark scene was good filler. The Lana Clark scene here, bad filler, right?
I love Lana and Clark, too. I always root for them. So, yes, but no. I choose them over more drag racing.
Yeah, okay. That's a fair point. Fair point, right? So we cut from this to Lex in Metropolis. He's visiting Dr. Ting. And Dr. Ting, this is some great continuity here, because she was actually in Phoenix. She was the doctor in Lionel's car when he's testing the blood. That Morgan Edge gives him, right? So this is some like long game continuity, because that was back in the second episode of the season. This is, you know, the 13th episode, and it's the same actress. It's Françoise Yip, and she's in a few episodes this season. And so good on you. Golf clap again for the show for having some forward thinking there. So continuity win. So anyway, Lex goes in there. This is pretty funny. She's like, my office hours start at 5. And he's like, I'm not a student, I'm Lex Luthor. And she says, am I supposed to be impressed? So I thought that was a pretty fun exchange between these guys.
Oh, I love when anyone is stronger than Lex, especially in this season too.
And this is a very classic kind of Luthor move here. He's like trying to get some information out of her, kind of use some power to manipulate her. She's not having it. And he throws some accusations her way, but she just basically tells him to get out. But this won't be the end of this back and forth. We'll come back to it later. But this is, again, a good Lex subplot can lift a mediocre to bad episode. And that's what's going on here. I'm much more invested in this subplot than the A plot.
Totally.
So remember when Clark was leaving the hospital in the previous scene? Well, now he's back at the hospital. I don't know what he did, right, but he's back at the hospital, and he sees Pete coming out from visiting Jonathan. He's like, hey, Pete, thanks for stopping by. And Pete's like, oh, you know, I've known your dad almost as long as my dad, and you guys are family. And so I'm like, where did Clark go? What the hell did he do? Well, you know, maybe he just went to the bathroom, right? So we got to go, you got to go.
That's true. I thought the Lex thing was more time than that, though.
Well, the Lex, maybe it's at night. Maybe it's because it was dark in that room. I thought it was at night, right? I thought it was like, oh, this is a night. Now we're here the next day. But Clark is wearing the same outfit the rest of the episode, almost. Like this blue plaid shirt and his red jacket. And I'm like, again, we play the game of like, what day is it? What time is it? Like, people are talking about yesterday, tomorrow, last night. And I'm like, but they're wearing the same clothes. So come on, wardrobe department.
But he's the most difficult one to judge on the days and the times, because his wardrobe, as your tally tells us, is very continuous.
Yeah, I will say I am surprised he's not wearing the blue shirt and red jacket more. You know, because when we get later in the show, like we're talking about seasons 5, 6, 7, he wears that thing in almost like every episode. It gets to the point of ridiculousness. So I'm glad he's still wearing like normal people clothes for now.
Right.
Pete here, you know, Pete obviously has got a lot going on. He doesn't mention to Clark that he owes money, but Clark's like, hey, Pete, what's up, man? He's like, oh, Clark, I know you got so much going on. I don't want to burden you. And I'm like, you know what, Pete? I appreciate the fact you didn't immediately go to Clark for help, right? But Clark pushes him. He's like, hey, no, really, what's going on? And, you know, Pete basically tells him, look, I did the race. I owe this guy 20 grand. He's going to kill me. He's going to kill my family. Like, we got to do something about this. And Clark's like, look, lay low. We're going to take care of it.
Right. And I mean, no, I don't want Pete to want Clark to fight all of his battles. But this was like the first good decision Pete made, actually telling Clark about this rather than going anywhere else. So I did give him props for that.
Although I gotta think it on some level, he's like, okay, I'm gonna tell him, he'll let me out.
Right.
I mean, he's got superpowers.
No, exactly.
Right?
I mean, if I had a superpower best buddy, I would probably use them a bit too. I do understand.
Next scene is Clark going to kind of follow up. Like, he told Pete, hey, he's going to take care of it. So he goes to Dante's place. Nobody's there. So he uses X-ray vision. He sees all these license plates to cars, which is suspicious. Although maybe Clark's more cynical than I thought, because if I would have seen those, I'm like, oh, they collect license plates, right? Big deal. I can't tell you how many bars in Texas are just covered in license plates. It's like, hey, it's part of the decor here. It's no big deal. But he calls the sheriff, and he's like, hey, sheriff, we got some stuff going on there. So okay. So they're gonna go raid the store. He does talk to Chloe in between these scenes, though, and she says more Grand Theft Auto than Indy 500 about Dante and his operation, which I thought
exactly
was pretty funny. Chloe gets all these hilarious lines. They do discuss Pete some. Chloe, you know, Clark's not gonna tell Chloe that it's Pete because he's keeping secrets, as Clark hopes that people honor his secrets to be kept.
Right.
But she figures it out because she's a smart girl. she says, like, well, let me talk to Pete, you know, because you guys have like a sibling rivalry going on. You guys are like brothers, and maybe he'll listen to me, you know. And I'm like, oh, that's, you know, that's a good point. Doesn't go anywhere, though. Totally. Chloe doesn't have any more scenes in this episode. Doesn't go anywhere.
You know, I did not realize that. That's hilarious. Why didn't you even say that?
Yeah, it's like you think it's going to set up a later scene. Doesn't, so.
She could have used one of her sources. We will never know.
We cut to the bros working on cars, right?
Right.
Dante and all these guys are souping up these vehicles. And then Sheriff Adams comes in. They do a raid. They arrest everybody. So you think, oh, wow, okay. This is great. They're arrested. They were doing bad stuff. Not only is Dante out of the picture, Pete's safe. This drag racing is going to be over. Because then, you know, the next scene is Sheriff Adams. She shows up at the Kent farm. She tells Clark, like, Mr. Kent, good work, Mr. Kent. And you don't realize that she's being sarcastic, and there's nothing there. So,
no, I love her character, though.
I will say, I found her extremely annoying when she first showed up back in the day when I watched the show.
Yeah.
But she did grow on me, and I find her, you know, charming in a, like, a small country town way, which is exactly what she is. So.
Exactly.
Because she has some really funny lines here, like, he's a real slippery fish.
Yeah.
or something. Or, you're about as accurate as the weatherman. Like, you know, this is just some good lines they get there. So
she's exactly what I would expect if I went to Smallville. So I was not disappointed when she came in to the picture.
she's had her eye on Dante for a while, so she's going to let Clark slide on this one, you know. Because obviously he called in the sting, which didn't lead to anything. But she's like, look, I know this guy's bad news. We're going to keep an eye out. So, you know, so be it. And then Clark goes up to the loft, and Pete's hiding out in the shadows because he's got the crap beat out of him. He does not look good. Dante went after him, beat him up because he thinks he called the sheriff, because Dante has a guy in the inside on the sheriff's department. That's how they found out about the raid. So Pete's in bad shape here. What'd you think of this scene?
I really like Sam Jones, I said, as an actor, so I was happy to see him actually like having an emotion and having something to say,
more than being just the funny guy,
right? He's in the sidekick. His bruises and his beat up everything looked really good too, so props to the makeup and that. It's like he didn't know it was gonna happen though. It's like he didn't know doing illegal things was going to land him in a bad situation.
Yeah, that's what's tough about this, because this is a great scene, like, in theory, between Clark and Pete. I did like how he's like, look, Clark, they're going to kill me and my family. You know, I need you to bust into an ATM machine, get that 20 grand, right? He's like, Pete, you can't ask me to do that. He's like, I can't. That's breaking the law. He's like, well, how many times have we gone Watergate or, you know, breaking and entering and an investigation? And Clark's like, well, that was to help people. And Pete's like, yeah, but now I'm the one who needs help. And that's actually a pretty valid point. But again, he's doing, like, as you said, he's doing illegal activity. So he kind of made this mess for himself. So he kind of cuts back on the sympathy you would otherwise have for him.
Right. Clark. Yeah. Clark is so open and loyal, but, like, you're going to be stupid. I don't think even Clark isn't that loving of you, of anybody.
It does put Clark in a tough spot, right? Because, I mean, these guys aren't going to go away. I mean, Pete basically lays out, he's like, you're not going to kill him. If we, you know, put him away, if you beat him up, he's going to come back for more. And, you know, so they're out of options, basically. So what Clark does is he goes to Lex, because who wouldn't go to Lex, right? Lex is like his best friend. He's always telling him, anything you need, come to me, right? So he goes there and he tells Lex, like, hey, I need $20,000. Lex is like, he says, my friend needs $20,000, right? And he's like, is this the proverbial friend that's actually you? And Clark's like, no, if it were, it'd be a lot easier, which is true, right? So Lex pretty much tells him no. What were you surprised by this? Or what did you think of Lex's reaction to Clark's request here?
I was surprised because, I mean, Lex is just like worships Clark. So I was surprised. But I did understand his take on it, that like if you give a, what was his line? Give a street rat. What did he say?
Yeah, give a stray dog food. They're going to keep coming back on your door every night.
They'll keep coming back. Yeah. That did make sense. And I mean, Lex would know because I'm sure people used him all his life. So I suppose, right. I was happy he stood his ground, but that would have been just a nice, easy out for Pete.
Well, and then so Lex is off like to get on a chopper to go to a meeting or something. Right. And he takes his coat, he walks off, and then Clark looks down. He's got his car keys there. So Clark steals the Porsche. This is like hardcore, right?
It's totally hardcore for Clark not on Red Kryptonite. Like, I was surprised. I was surprised by his guts in that. But obviously then we know he has a plan. He doesn't expect to have the Porsche forever.
Yeah, he shows up on the farm, and Pete's waiting there for him, and Pete says, Clark, you're awesome. And I love this line from Clark. He says, I'm glad you're happy, Pete, because I had to lie for you, I had to steal for you, and now I'm going to have to cheat for you. It's like, damn, laying it out, right?
Clark was totally done with Pete at this point. Like, he's like, dude, stop making these decisions. I thought I taught you better than this, is basically how I feel Clark is in every episode that somebody loves does something stupid.
No, exactly, because, you know, they come up with some ridiculous, like, Star Wars Episode One ridiculous plot about racing, where he's like, okay, here's the deal. The Porsche is going to be the collateral, and you're going to race in Dante's car, but I'm going to fry his engine so he can't beat you. It's like Episode One, where it's like, he doesn't need to know the pod is yours. I'm going to race it for you, and the ship's going to, you know what I'm saying? It's just it's very convoluted, so.
Right. Didn't assume at the beginning of this episode that the end result would be so complicated. We just thought it was going to be Fast and Furious.
Well, give him credit for changing it up some, right?
Exactly.
So they go to Dante's place. They set up this whole race, and they're like, okay, here's what we're going to do, right? If Pete wins, he keeps the Porsche, and then you leave him alone forever. He owes you no money. If Dante wins, you keep the Porsche, and then we'll call it a day, or something like that. But then Pete goes to, like, get his car ready. Clark uses his super hearing, overhears Dante talking to his guys. They're rigging the car that Pete's going to drive to blow up when he hits 100. So Clark's like, Clark, again, not thinking, right? He just barges into the situation. He's like, hey, race is over. You guys are rigging it. And they beat him up, throw him in the back of the car, because they have kryptonite, so he can get beat up. So, ouch.
It's like he didn't know that there was kryptonite in the room. Ugh. He never thinks it through. he gets better. But at this point, I'm like, come on, Clark. Get it together. You have one weakness.
I don't necessarily question the fact that they threw him in the back of the car, because they want to get rid of him, and the car's going to blow up. So it's actually a pretty smart plan to dispose of Clark. I mean, it's terrible. Exactly. It's cold-blooded, but it makes sense. And then, again, we do the whole race, and it's in the middle of the day, which I found curious as well. Like, I thought it'd be, right. I guess, you know, it's more expensive to film at night, obviously, so that's right. Probably why they decided to have their big finale of the day. So they're racing in the middle, I don't know, Saturday afternoon. Good thing no one else is on the roads. I mean, that's why these drag races happen at 2 in the morning, right? Because the roads are clear, right? That's, like, a big reason why. Right. But here, I don't know, 4 o'clock on a Saturday? I don't know. Nobody's on this country road. So Dante and Pete, they're going to race. Pete has the bomb in his car that's going to go off when he hits 100. Clark is in the back. He's incapacitated from the kryptonite. So stakes are like, how are they going to get out of this? Honestly, I kind of forgotten while rewatching it because, I mean, I don't revisit this episode very often, to be honest. So I had forgotten. I'd forgotten what was going to happen. So you see that, you know, they're getting faster and faster and faster. And by the way, quick aside, I don't know about you, but my car will go up to 100 miles an hour without kryptonite, Rose. I don't know if your car is like that.
No, mine will too. It's pretty crazy.
So they act like, oh no, Chris, it's like you could have said 150. I don't know, but like to act like 100 is some like speed you can't achieve without pushing the green button was just amusing to me. Because you see like it's 80, 85, 90. So
oh my.
Pete pushes the button. The kryptonite goes into the fuel. So it clears out of the trunk. And I guess that's good enough for Clark to, you know, regain his strength. So he gets his bearings and punches through the gas tank, basically, which keeps Pete from going up to 100. Although, man, that was a really... He got up to 80 real fast, and then was really slowly inching towards 100 there. Ah! Good thing it took him so long. But
it's called slow-mo.
It's called dramatic license, right? Right. So he punches through the gas tank. The gas goes everywhere on the road. So behind Pete, the car slows down, but Dante's behind him. You know, Dante's going, I don't know, 90 or whatever. Makes the road slick, and then he, you know, swerves, loses control of the car, flips over. Dante is dead, okay? Like, Pete even says, oh my God, I think he's dead. Like, to Pete's credit, he is kind of shocked by this, right?
I was totally shocked. Like, I didn't expect this, like, villain with no powers to just die, to be killed. I was like, I was actually quite taken back by that. And I was like, that's at that point, I was like, Clark's never going to forgive him.
Well, this guy didn't have any powers, right? He didn't know Clark's secret. So there wasn't really a reason to kill him other than, I guess, he was never going to let Pete alone. But damn, that is a dark ending, and we're gonna add plus one for a Smallville high school student death to this, because in a deleted scene it's established that Chloe took driver's ed with him on the DVDs. I want to talk about deleted scenes at the end here, but there are two deleted scenes in this episode.
Ooh.
And we established that he was a student at Smallville high school.
Right.
Who had a class with Chloe. So he's dead now, so that's a plus one to our Smallville student high school death. So ooh. We cut back to Lex, and Dr. Ting has come and visited him at the mansion. He's like, I thought you didn't do house calls. He always does a one-liner. It's great. And he's cut off all her funding. And at the university, she doesn't have access to her lab or anything like that. So she's come to Lex to say WTF, basically. And he says, look, here's the deal. You're going to work for me now. I'm going to pay you twice as much, but you're going to tell me everything you were doing for my father and what you were doing with those blood pallets.
Right. He didn't immediately just, like, ask her, like, you want to work for me? He's like, no, I just cut everything off that you have, and so you have to come to me.
Right, that's what the Luthers do. It's all about maneuvering. So this is Lex learning from the best, learning from his dad, yeah.
Exactly.
And this sets her up to be Lex's scientist of the season. Like, he's always got one of these guys. He had Dr. Hamilton in season one.
Right.
He had Dr. Walden in season two. Now he's got Dr. Ting in season three. So it's a Luther tradition. He's got to have this scientist working on some nefarious projects with him on the side. So anyway, so more to come from her. She's in the next few episodes. So establishes the new status quo with Lex and his research into the Adams story. Speaking of Adam... we cut back to Adam, and he's having another nightmare or something, and he wakes up, and he's in bad shape, and he goes and stumbles over to his needle and injects himself. And he looks pretty gross here, doesn't he, Rose?
Oh, my gosh, yes. And that was, like, me then thinking, okay, he's not a cyborg. Like I was telling you, I thought he was, like, a spy. So then I was like, okay, he's literally just a zombie. And I guess that's who he is now. And then he finds the needle. So
he cleans up pretty quick, doesn't he, Rose?
He does. Is it like 3 seconds? And then he's like, looks completely healthy. I wish that was like my morning.
Yeah. He looks like he's decomposing. And then he like takes a shot and he's like, hey, Lana, what's up? You know, looking all nice and like sweaty and cut, you know? And
yeah, man, isn't his hair brushed too?
Maybe an injection of that, right? So basically she says, look, I didn't tell anyone about you, but if you're gonna live here, you need to be honest with me, which is
right.
A very fair thing for her to say. I know we give a lot of crap for like Clark, tell me all your secrets and all that. No, this is a completely different situation. Like, this guy's freeloading in her place of business. She deserves some answers, you know. So he's nice about it. He's like, Lana, it's way beyond your understanding. Just be cool. Just don't ask any questions. But she keeps pushing, and then he like flips the switch real quick, right? He's like, and I like his little touch, like he steps into like the red color from like the stained glass window. So like, okay, Adam is evil now, right? He's like, look, if you tell anyone about me, you're gonna regret ever meeting me. And he like menacingly like backs into his apartment and slams the door in her face. And like, oh, Lana's in trouble now.
No, he was totally like the cute, mysterious, and then like kind of weird, and then super weird, and then like evil. I like character development like that because I don't want them to be boring all the time.
Right, and it's been a slow burn for Adam.
Yeah.
You know, despite all of the episode trailers acting like he's like evil, like every week it's like. These promos, I post them on the social media, they make me laugh because they're misleading a lot of the times. And I think like the last two or three episodes have like implied that Adam was evil. But he wasn't until now. And this is the first really bad thing you've seen him do. He's done nothing but be helpful. I mean, he's been a little mysterious, but he hasn't been a bad guy until now. So now we know, like, okay, he's probably not. I'm gonna call it safely now. He's probably not Batman Rose.
No, exactly. Yeah. I mean, bleeding from the eyes. Gave it away, but then the red lighting. It's like, okay, done. No Batman in this small episode.
no Batman for you. So Lex comes to visit Clark at the loft, and he says, like, hey, after we talked yesterday, I was like, whoa, yesterday? Like, again, Clark is still wearing the same clothes. Like, it's at night. I thought that was earlier in the day. I'm very confused now about what day it is. What amount of time this episode takes place over. It's one of those things. Classic Smallville. What day is it? What time is it? Whatever. Fine. But anyway. This is a really, really, really good scene between Clark and Lex, I think. Because Lex is like, yeah, after you left, someone saw the Porsche leave the premises and people thought it was for a joyride, but I don't know. And the weirdest thing was it was returned with his tarp right over it and everything. It was very odd. And Clark's like, yeah, I don't know. Okay. And Lex pretty much tells him, yeah, I know it was you, but it's cool. And I know you did something for a friend, and that's a true mark of friendship is navigating those shades of gray, right?
Right.
And there we go. So I thought that was really good scene between the two of them.
I really love their friendship from their first meeting to when maybe they're not friends anymore. They do understand each other, and I don't know why, because they're so different. But I feel like mm-hmm. they do, and it's pretty crazy how Lex like understands. I guess it's because Lex would do anything for Clark that he understands that Clark needed to do something for his friend. But that's probably the only friend Lex has that would he'd do anything for. So.
Yeah, he'd do anything for him except give him the 20 grand he asked for. Right.
So. Exactly. Well, that was for their own good, not Dante's.
That's right.
Theirs.
Yeah, because he's dead.
Right. Because he's dead. It was that fast too. How you said it right then, it was how fast he died.
Well, okay. Yeah, let's talk about that for a second before we wrap up here. Right. Is Pete not in trouble for this? Like, a man is dead. Like, I don't understand. Like, I don't even know Clark would have like taken him to the police and like, look, Pete. You need to confess. I mean, I don't know. Like, technically, they didn't kill him, right? He lost control of his car, right? But they were drag racing. So I feel like someone should be in trouble here. I don't know who it is, but
see,
it's, a man is dead.
Area.
I figured someone would be in trouble.
This is
the gray area. Because
everything was wrong this whole episode. Everybody was making poor decisions. I guess they all did it to themselves. One of them's dead. He did it to himself.
And even,
it's okay.
Even Jonathan in the next scene, right? By the way, the next day, because let's think about it. Lex came and visited Clark at night. That was night, all
right? Right.
Jonathan comes home the next day. Clark is wearing the same clothes. Wearing those same clothes. He's been wearing those clothes for like 3 or 4 days in a row. I hope it's really cold out there, and I hope he's wearing an undershirt. Otherwise, he does not smell good. But anyway, point being. Jonathan and Clark sit down and kind of like father son talk, and Jonathan tells him about kind of like shades of gray. And this is a good scene here because he basically tells him, "Look, you are going to be faced with moral decisions that me and your mother can never even conceive of. You know, being Superman
totally.
In the future. With great power comes great responsibility, right? So
right.
This takes Clark by surprise because he thought his dad is like Mr. like you know moral center uncompromising, but even Jonathan has to admit, look, sometimes you got to bend rules to for the greater good. So there it is, right?
Right, and that was him definitely alluding to his heart attack situation, wasn't it?
Yeah, so he finally, he admits to Clark, right? He's like, yeah, I did go talk to Jor-El. That's probably why my heart's in bad shape right now, but I'd do it again for you. I know, right? Everybody wants a dad like Jonathan Kent.
I was sad as soon as he had a heart attack. I was like, I know what's coming. Even if it's a few years, okay? Even if it's a few years.
Right. He says in his first scene, he's like, it's going to take more than a heart attack to get your old man down. It's like, well, actually. Foreshadowing.
Little did he know. Poor guy.
Little did he know. So then we cut to our final scene, and Pete's, playing basketball out on the, or Pete and Clark, or who is it? Someone is out there playing basketball, and someone else shows up. I guess
Clark.
Clark's
Clark. Pete shows up.
Okay, so Pete shows up, and he's like, hey, man, things are, I'm sorry. I'm never going to disrespect your powers again. You could tell Clark is like, you could tell there's a shift in his attitude towards Pete. Usually he would be like, hey, man, everything's cool, but things have gotten real. Things have gotten hashtag too real between these guys, right? And he's like, look, I'm never going to disrespect your powers again. I'm sorry, until the day I die, I promise, Clark doesn't say anything to this. And then Pete's like, okay, cool. Well, you want to play some hoops?
It's like he forgot that someone died, yesterday?
Yeah.
That is the shift, like you're saying. That was the shift in their friendship, for sure.
I like that there's no reconciliation here. They talked about in the companion, they're like, yeah, they thought about them just, playing hoops at the end and, making amends. But it was like, no, this was hardcore, and this is like a big turn here. So,
right?
No, they're not going to be cool. And actually, that was a very strong choice at the end. And Clark, I like how Clark, he just says, not today, Pete. He drops the basketball, he walks off. Me and my best friend Lance, who's been on the show several times, we say that to each other, like, it's like, hey, man, you want to hang out today? We're like, not today, Pete. Like, not that we're mad at each other, just that we know it's like a, it's a quote, it's a quotable from the show.
That's
funny. And a lot of years we joke that I was Clark and he was Pete, and then Pete left the show, so we kind of had to reassess that situation. But anyway. But not today, Pete. That's something that that is a Smallville quote I use on a fairly regular basis to joke around with Lance. So anyway, that's that. They go their separate ways, and then we hear Wonderwall by Ryan Adams, not the Oasis version. What did you think of this choice?
I really liked it because, some of the music is very overplayed. Or was and still is, and Wonderwall is one of them. So I appreciated that it was a different version, and I think it's a somber song, but I enjoyed that it was like even more like somber, because that moment of the two best buddies not being best buddies needed that, I think.
Yeah, this was the more subtle version of the song.
Yeah,
right? Oasis version was kind of more. Kind of in your face more. This right. One's like acoustic, right, Adam?
Yes.
So it was a good. Smallville has a good mix of these. Like sometimes they'll use quote unquote classic versions of songs, and other times they'll use newer covers of them. And I think they have a good balance. And hey, I'm all about song covers, because if I love a song, I want to hear it as many versions as possible to kind of, it gives it more life, gives it more longevity. Because if you listen to the same song over and over and over, it gets boring, totally. Right? Eventually. Diminishing returns. So to have other versions of it, it's great.
Yeah, and I thought it worked really well with how emotionally charged that end was. I mean, for me, it was, because I don't like to see Clark upset with his friends. In this whole episode, I was like, Pete, why are you doing these things?
Well, hey, I'll give it credit here. Thank God for not another Clark and Lana ending in the loft, okay? Mixing it up. Ending on a different note
is
great.
This is true. Yes, I was definitely glad that was, the main conflict that he was having. I didn't want, Lana splashed in there too much. Like, she was a little bit. But, I didn't need her the whole time. Because Pete, like we were saying, Pete needed some time. Pete needed some screen time.
And for better or for worse, he got it. So before we jump into the wrap up here, there were two deleted scenes in this episode that you can find on the DVD. The first one is Clark doing some research at the torch with Chloe before the scene we see him and Chloe in the episode. There's a scene before that. He's printing out like a picture of a car, and Chloe's like, "Oh, I'm looking for a new car or something." And he basically explains, "Oh, there's the drag racing thing going on." And this is when Chloe mentions that, yeah, she had driver's ed with Dante, and he got, you know, kicked out, which is like, of course, driver's ed, right? He's the crazy car driver. But that establishes him as a student at Smallville High School, and he's dead. So that's why he counts on my tally board. So there you have it. But that was a good scene between Clark and Chloe. Talk about more of Clark's investigation. I totally think that one should have been left in. I don't know what you could take out. Maybe one of these filler scenes with Clark and Lana, perhaps? Or the filler scene with Clark and Jonathan? I'm just saying.
People demand Lana, though. That's the issue.
they do demand Lana. The other scene, very short scene, but it takes place right before Clark breaks into Dante's warehouse with the cars. He shows up, and the girl who I assume is his girlfriend, who like throws the flag at the beginning of all the races, she's there and locking
up. Dante's girlfriend? Yeah.
Yeah. And Clark's like, "Have you seen Dante?" She's like, "No. Do I look like his PDA?" And she drives off.
Okay, I'm glad.
Way to date yourself, Smallville.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I'm glad that wasn't in there.
So that's fun. I'm glad that was cut. But I do wish they would have incorporated that Chloe scene. But anyway, those are your two deleted scenes, and you can find them all on Smallville, the season 3 DVD set.
Hey. But look, I know you're probably mad as hell at me, and to be honest, I don't blame you. All I can say is I'm sorry.
I am too, Pete. I had to steal from one friend to help another. And someone died.
I know. If I had listened to you from the start, none of this would have happened. Clark, listen, you told me a secret because I'm your friend. And at times, that's not an easy thing to be. But it doesn't give me the right to do what I did. I just want to say that, Clark, I swear it will never happen again. Clark, I know I let you down. But I promise you, until the day that I die, I will never disrespect your powers again. You want to play some hoops?
I was just about to go inside.
Oh, come on. Game of 21 by twos. Three-pointers outside of the crack, no powers.
Not today, Pete.
Velocity got a 7.8 out of 10 on IMDb, and the Superman homepage gave it a 1 out of 5. Neil Bailey did not like this episode at all. He said, quote, "The season has been really great so far. For the most part, I've been impressed. This episode was the first time watching Smallville became a chore for me. The first time, period. For this, I offer my first 1 of 5. Don't try to be hip. Try to be Smallville, folks. The little girl episode beat this one, and that takes talent." And by the little girl episode, he's talking about Accelerate in season 2, which he gave 2 out of 5. I actually really liked that episode. Did you like Accelerate from season 2, Rose? You know, the one with the little girl who's Lana's friend?
No, I did. Yeah, I thought that was super interesting.
Yeah, that's like one of Lana's best episodes. So
yeah,
I'm just saying. It didn't revolve around, you know, Clark or some random, you know, villain of the week, boyfriend of the week or whatever. Exactly. But anyway, Neil Bailey, not a fan of that one, not a fan of this one. 1 out of 5. Wow, that is a low score. IMDb, 7.8 out of 10, pretty average for IMDb. As I've said before on the podcast, out of 10 on IMDb is meaningless. Basically, you go from like 6 to like 9.5. Those ish. That's your real scale.
Yeah, if it's 10, it hasn't been voted on.
Yeah, and if it's anything below 5, it's complete garbage that shouldn't exist, basically. On IMDb,
what?
So.
glad this didn't get complete garbage then.
You haven't been anything as voted a five, have you?
No. No. That's funny.
Well, I almost got myself in trouble on that one. But anyway.
No. You're fine.
So, Rose, on the letter grade scale that we use here on the podcast, what would you give Velocity?
I am critical, but I'm not very critical because Smallville is Smallville to me. So I think I would just be minus. I think I would say that because of, one, the drag racing. I would have really enjoyed something a little bit more entertaining. Two, Pete and his terrible decision-making. The whole way, he did not make one good decision. And like you're saying, the odd continuation of days and nights and years and et cetera, that was difficult to tell.
Well, fair enough. I actually enjoy this episode a lot more than I thought, like rewatching it for the podcast, because it has a bad reputation. It's like, oh yeah, the Fast and Furious episode. I remember when, you know, I was talking to you about being on the show, I was like, well, I got this one. You're like, oh, I like that one. I was like, oh, okay, great.
I mean, my rating isn't even, I don't even think that that's low. Because I could be really critical of things. But like anything in Smallville doing anything, I'm like, okay, yeah, sure. Okay, that's fine.
I myself was on the fence here between a B minus and a C plus, because I actually did enjoy it. There were certain parts of it were like, yeah, these are good. Like the scenes where Clark's like mad at Pete and like, look, man, I had to cheat for you, lie for you, steal for you. And then like, you know, him talking to Lex about, you know, doing favors for friends and morally gray. Like, I thought that was actually some great stuff taken out of the context of this weird ripoff Fast and the Furious episode. But even that said, it was enjoyable. Like, we're laughing about it. It's stupid. Like, kryptonite cars, but it was kind of fun, to be honest. But just the pure fact, like you said, you know, the Pete with the, where did this come from? You know, could we have built up to this? Him having this like, living vicariously through Clark and inferiority complex kind of came out of nowhere. So lack of build up to that point for Pete and just an odd choice. I mean, I get like the outside of Smallville universe choice because Fast and the Furious, but in universe choice, very odd thing to have Pete get involved with like street racing.
Right. And like you said, in Smallville.
Although Ross the Boss is a real cool nickname. So I'll give him that.
I hope he carried that on. Yes.
So ultimately, I'm going to give it a C plus from me and a B minus from you. So pretty close.
Yes.
So by far, not the worst episode of Smallville. There are episodes far worse than this. I feel like this one has an unfairly bad reputation.
I agree. And like we're saying, I think it's maybe because the Fast and Furious fandom and Smallville fandom, I guess they just don't cross over.
They don't mix.
So I guess that's why people are like, come on, we didn't need this. Don't try to taint it.
All right. Well, let's go to our tally board, Rose. We have a few categories to update. We have a plus one for hospital visit. So that brings us to 40 hospital visits. We have a plus one for movie plot as an episode for Fast and the Furious, obviously, as we talked about here. That brings us up to 4 overall in the series. That's going to continue to go up as the show goes on. So, but only 4 so far, so not so bad. 2.5 seasons in, only 4 movies you guys have been, quote, inspired by. You know, not too bad. And then finally, we have a Smallville High School student death plus one. Brings us up to 10. That's Dante. And yes, the deleted scene establishes that he was a student. I wasn't sure how old he was. I was like, is this guy their age? Is he 30? I mean, Clark looks 30, so I don't know what a high schooler is supposed to look like in this show, right?
Everybody said that. I do not agree.
You don't think so? He is from Krypton. I'll give him that, right? But all the other people look older than they should too.
That's what I tell everybody, okay? My mom tries to fight me on this. I'm like, but he's an alien from outer space / a superhero man. So what is he supposed to look like?
Well, talk about living in somebody's shadow, having an inferiority complex. I was the same age as Clark when Smallville was on the air. And I was like, is this what I'm supposed to look like and be doing? I'm like, like, man, I got a long way to go. So anyway, everyone has a little bit of Pete in them.
No, because he's an alien. It's fine.
So just to recap, we have a hospital visits is now at 40. Movie plots as an episode is now at 4. Smallville High School student deaths is now at 10. So, and then finally, we have the Bechdel test that we always ask if this episode passes. Did this episode pass, Rose?
No, it failed.
That is unfortunate. I don't even think two women had a scene together, period. Because Lana and Chloe didn't talk, and Martha was off with Jonathan, and
no.
Dante's girlfriend was kind of the only girl around, and that's it.
Did she say anything at all?
Nothing of consequence, no. So this episode does fail the Bechdel test. And there you go. There's our series tally board for this week. Well, Rose, it was a lot of fun having you on. It's always great bringing in new voices who are fans of Smallville, and I really appreciate you taking the time being on the show.
Thank you for having me. This was super fun, and I'm so happy to have found a root of the fandom, because it was hard tweeting at myself for a while, and finally people were reaching out, and I was very excited. So thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. You're welcome, part of the Always Hold On to Smallville community here. So if people want to find you online, like on Twitter, social media, where can they find you?
You can find me on, like, basically everything. So on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, it's Rose_Liston, LISTON.
Well, great. And you're continuing to, you know, talk about Smallville. I know you're looking for people to talk to about it. So you guys go find Rose out there, talk some Smallville. She'd be happy to tweet with you.
Yes, please. Exactly. Tweet, message, all the above.
So as for me, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreonZach. You can also find me hosting my other podcast, Standard Orbit, on the Trek FM network. We talk about all things old and new Captain Kirk. We're on Twitter at Trek FM. And as for the podcast itself, you can find us on Twitter at Always Smallville with one S. You can find us on Facebook at Always Hold On to Smallville, or you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com, once again with one S. Well, that's going to do it for us this week. But hey, we have another movie plot as an episode next week, Obsession. Fatal Attraction, Smallville style, next week. Alicia Baker comes to the show, a very popular guest star. But until then, always hold on to Smallville. Sitting maybe you're gonna be the one that saves me. You're gonna be the one that saves me. And after all, you're my wonder. You're my wonder. You're my